Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hello and welcome to Clash of the Titles, the podcast that sees two movies with something in common go head-to-head to see which one does it better, and welcome to part two of this week's Clash. So, on Monday, Jane Austen's Emma got a Beverly Hills makeover in 1995's Clueless, and today, the Bard goes grunge, as we're in Seattle, where The Taming of the Shrew finds itself a new home amongst some American high schoolers in 1999's 10 Things I Hate About You.
Her sister, Kat, is something else entirely.
People perceive you as somewhat tempestuous. Heinous witch is the term used most often.
The only thing they have in common...
I am the only girl in school who's not dating.
Oh, no, you're not. Your sister doesn't date.
...is one simple rule.
Okay, you can date when she does.
But she's a mutant. What if she never dates?
Then you'll never date. Oh, I like that.
We will have a winner at the end of the show, but which film will it be? Let's find out. It's Clash of the Titles.
Release the Kraken.
Hello, Clash Butters. I forgot to write down a quote for the start of this episode. I'm Alex Zane.
I'm Vicky Crumbs.
I'm Chris Tilly.
Hello, Katarina. Make anyone cry today?
Sadly, no. But it's only 4:30.
Oh, right then. Very quickly, do please subscribe to us if you haven't done already. And if you would be kind enough to write a review, that would be amazing. Give us a rating. But if you do write a review, there's every chance Chris Tilly will go out and find it and read it out in his alter ego, Chris Thrilly, which sounds a bit like this.
This is from Lisa Frenchie, I think it says. And it's called This Review Does Not Mention Tim Curry. Lisa says, my favourite podcast to drown out the annoying colleagues at work talking about stuff they watch at the weekend and fill my ears with people who know what they're talking about, not to mention the weird life tidbits they give us for free. A lot of those in the last episode. Vicky, Chris and Alex are the workmates you wish you had, and I will always laugh at every Tim Curry reference. So she does mention Tim Curry. It's got a twist.
Wow,
look at that.
Bait and switch.
Review the review.
Oh, 5 stars.
5 stars. Thanks, Lisa. Frenchy?
I think so, yeah.
All right.
It's like Frenchy, but without the E. F-R-N-C-H-Y.
Okay, cool. Well, thank you nonetheless. A 5-star review. Brilliant. So, part two of Clueless versus 10 Things I Hate About You. These were Victoria's choices. Once again, remind us why.
Because I like them.
Yeah, because she likes them. So, on Monday, I got all clued up on Clueless. And today, Chris, who loves a list, is going through 10 Things I Hate About You. Chris takes on a journey.
Okay, this is tricky. This is tricky. Here we go. Two guys like one girl, no guys like that girl's sister. Girl that two guys like can't date until sister that no one likes gets a date. So friend of one of the two guys asked the other guy to pay an Australian no one wants to date the sister no one wants to date. But the sister no one wants to date doesn't want to date the Australian no one wants to date. Then there's some indie music, some arguing, some more indie music, some kissing. They all live happily ever after. Then there's some more indie music at the end.
Perfect.
Freestyler.
So I saw this film at the time, probably on video. Haven't seen it since. And that's about as exciting as my story gets. So when did you first see this, Vicky?
Same, sort of the same story. Saw it when it came out. I've seen it maybe once or twice more after that. But just loved it when it came out. But also, I mean, it was, I think it must have been the first time I'd seen Heath Ledger. Mm. Would that be right?
It would be, definitely.
I was like, fucking hell, who is that?
Mm-hmm. Alex?
Watched it once. That's it.
We've all got this.
As in the weeks, this is the first time you've ever seen it?
No, sorry, this would be a rewatch. I'd seen it once before, didn't remember anything apart from Heath Ledger singing on the seats, the bleachers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that was it. That was the only bit I remembered. So it felt like a first watch for me this time, and I thoroughly enjoyed it.
Well, let's look at a bit of background to this one. I'm going to do my second synopsis now. This one courtesy of Wikipedia. The Taming of the Shrew is a comedy by William Shakespeare believed to have been written between 1591 and 1592. The main plot depicts the courtship of Petruchio and Katharina, the headstrong, obdurate shrew. Mm. Initially, Katharina is an unwilling participant in the relationship. However, Petruchio tames her with various psychological torments, such as keeping her from eating and drinking.
Yeah, so have you seen... So this is one Shakespeare play I have seen. And it is mad.
Yeah, like, I'm getting to that. Until she becomes a desirable, compliant and obedient bride. The subplot features a competition between the suitors of Katharina's younger sister, Bianca, who is seen as the ideal woman. The question of whether the play is misogynistic has become the subject of considerable controversy, particularly among modern scholars, audiences and readers.
I think it's a hard yes for me. I mean, I don't think there's much debate to be had.
I don't know.
Well, I mean, we have to bring up the age-old adage that we use on the show. Different time, wasn't it? Different time.
For once, I think I agree.
But it has been adapted a whole bunch of times. As you know, Vicky, there's been lots of Shakespeare adaptations over the years.
Yeah.
We've had Taming Mrs. Shrew, Impossible Catherine, The Framing of the Shrew, You Made Me Love You, Kiss Me Kate, Deliver Us From Eva, featuring 10 Things I Hate About You star Gabrielle Union. I mean, she's been in two adaptations of this.
That's why you get to 400, because of Gabrielle Union.
And a 1997 pornographic film called The Taming of the Screw.
It's no Edward Penis Hands.
But we are here to talk about 10 Things I Hate About You, which was written by the powerhouse team of Karen McCullough and Kristen Smith. And there's loads of videos of them doing Q&As and interviews talking about this film. They are brilliant. They're a brilliant writing pair. And they're really funny. They're very honest, especially, you notice the further we get away from this film being made, the more honest they are about the production, of which there are some interesting stories. But as Alex said on Monday, they wanted to write a teen movie and were inspired by Clueless's use of Jane Austen, particularly the fact that they wouldn't have to pay anyone for the story.
Great.
So they decided to use the sister suitor plot line from Shakespeare's play. They said they found it tricky to adapt as so much of the humour is cruel and unkind. But they were very happy with the structure, so much so that they kept having to remind themselves that it's actually Shakespeare's structure rather than their own.
That's right.
They kept thinking they were really clever.
Like, this is going really well.
This is writing itself.
It is.
Wow, that's so funny. His structure, it really works.
So as they were sort of researching to write the story, McCullough went through her diaries and found a page that said 10 Things I Hate About Anthony, who was a boyfriend of hers when she was a teenager. And that inspired the title and some of the ideas in the film. It was the first script they ever sold. It was greenlit even before they had a director. And it was originally much darker.
Just on that note about the boyfriend thing, because I read that as well, and it was like, oh, I don't know about that. A boyfriend who she hated at school, and she wrote this list saying 10 things I hate about Anthony. And she is, I found out, still friends with that Anthony. And she said, we're still friends today. And every now and then I get a random phone call in the middle of the night saying, my nephew doesn't believe that this title is about me. Tell him. And on the phone, I'm like, yes, I hated Anthony at high school.
In terms of casting, there's loads of casting stories out there, but I'm only going to mention the ones that I could corroborate on the record. Kate Hudson and Katie Holmes were nearly cast. I'm not sure which roles, but they were nearly cast in the leads. And Josh Hartnett very, very nearly got the Heath Ledger role.
Okay.
The women said he was very close. I could kind of see Josh Hartnett doing that.
Yeah, I like him.
He's fine. He's no Heath Ledger.
No.
And that's all I've got in terms of background on this one.
I'll just back up what Vicky said about Heath Ledger being like, whoa, when you see him in this movie. I'm saying Gil Younger, the director.
Yeah.
He says, after the audition, Younger recalled saying to the women on the production team, ladies, I have never wanted to sleep with a man, but if I had to sleep with a man, it would be that man. Great. Cast him immediately.
So let's talk about...
I mean, having said that out loud, that sounds like a lawsuit waiting to happen.
It really does, yeah.
Yeah, he's a strange one, Gil. We'll get on to that. So let's talk about the movie, starting with my first section, which is called Welcome to Hogwarts. Because what is going on with this school?
Well, because it's meant to be Padua, so it's the you know, there is... not princesses, are they? In Taming of the Shrew, do they not live in a castle?
Let me just check Wikipedia. I don't know.
So it's a fascinating building. It was built to look like a French chateau in the late 1800s, and then they ran out of money. It was going to be a luxury hotel financed by the North Pacific Railroad Company.
Really?
Yeah, and then the financial crash of 1893 and a fire a few years later. Right. And it wasn't going to be that luxury hotel, but then it was turned into a school. So it's actually a functioning school. Okay. In Washington.
Yeah, it's beautiful. The script was originally written to be set in Portland. Then they couldn't find what they wanted there and they were going to set it in LA. But it was Gil Younger who said it would be too close to Clueless. Yeah. We're already close to Clueless.
Yeah.
Let's not do that. So yes, this is, as you say, it's a Stadium High School in Tacoma, Washington. So, yeah, it's a beautiful school. It kicks off with bare naked ladies. One week blaring from a car, and then Cat pulls up and Joan Jett's bad reputation is blaring from that car.
I can never disassociate that song from Shrek.
That's true,
Bad reputation is always the fight with the guards in Shrek.
For me, it's the opening credits to Freaks and Geeks, which I've watched so many times. I hear it a lot.
Yeah.
It's a great tune, though.
Great.
I do think the soundtrack is quite odd in this film, in that certainly a lot of my favourite songs in it aren't from that era at all. They're all from the 80s. Joan Jett's the 80s and The Party Later, there's some bangers, but they're all, I feel like, songs that they wouldn't play at a 90s party if you're a high school student, unless you're me, because I was a geek
that,
listening
yeah.
to old stuff. Cause
it's an interesting one, cool. isn't it? We didn't mention the Clueless soundtrack on Monday's episode, but that went platinum. It was a huge soundtrack, and this one was a big hit as well.
Yeah, I mean, there's tunes. We'll get on to...
This is a better soundtrack.
A band that does feature heavily in this film, again, quite weirdly. We meet Alison Janney playing the world's worst guidance counsellor. and already the tone's a bit strange here because it feels like she's in a spoof where some of the other characters aren't in a spoof.
Yeah.
But yeah, she's writing a... What's she writing? A romance.
A erotic filthy novel.
Fiction, yeah. A filthy.
Like fiction. A Mills and Boone.
So this is a pre-West Wing. This came out just before. But you know, she's so good. So I interviewed Alison Janney for A Spy, and I'd never interviewed her before, and I'd seen her in the West Wing, but she's so funny in Spy. And in this, because she improvised that line where she's like, cat, and to get a laugh from just saying cat is skillful.
Yeah.
Someone throws something at a window and she calls them shit for brains, but you can see that that's not what she's saying. It's very clear that she's saying motherfucker. And the screenwriter said that's because although you're allowed one fuck in a PG-13, it can't be combined with a mother.
Yeah, motherfucker is still viewed as a very bad word on TV. I don't think you're allowed it. Certainly not pre-Watershed.
Am I allowed to say it on a podcast? I've
not
just said
sure.
it three times.
I mean, not if we're hoping to get sponsored by Mumsnet.
Enter Kangaroo Boy, Patrick Verona, played by Heath Ledger. So he'd done a couple of films in Australia before this, including... God, I think it was called Two Hands, like almost like a gangster film, which had sort of got some cool notices at festivals. But this, as you said, this was the first time any of us saw her. And he looks great.
Mm-hmm.
He's got loads of charisma. We find out he's exposed himself in a cafeteria, but it's with a bratwurst. But I don't know, different time.
I suppose.
Seems forgivable.
I mean, it is forgivable because it's a bratwurst, because you're not really exposing yourself. It's fine. And it leads into the Alison Janney joke about writing bratwurst into her.
That's the bit that hasn't aged
fiction.
Well. Like, she's kind of like perving on him a bit, and that hasn't aged very well. That just feels very a little bit.
Oh, I didn't.
She sort of looks him up and down, and she's like bratwurst, okay. And then yeah.
But I don't mind it because it feels like she's not a real character. She's just, yeah. It feels a bit spoofy. It feels a bit Zuckery almost with her scenes.
Her presence in this movie is great at the start because she's fantastic. She's
bloody funny.
And it's amazing that literally, and she disappears.
Yeah.
At the halfway mark, she is gone. She never reappears for the second half of this film.
There are some deleted scenes, including one, I think, where she sleeps with... The director, Gil, wrote some scenes for himself where he was getting laid. He was a teacher who was kind of horny.
Great.
And...
Did you watch the bloopers?
I did. There's one where he's half naked.
That's the one where he is that him getting off with Alice and Janie in the corridor?
But that's a joke. There is a scene where he's together with her in an actual scene because he's a horny teacher. But yeah, he wrote those scenes for himself. He shot those scenes for himself. They're not the best, and he cut those scenes.
Right. That's the most important thing, though. He cut those scenes. He didn't leave them in.
Yeah. You definitely get a sense that the screenwriters maybe didn't have the best relationship with him while they were making this film, even though they loved the film. Anyway, let's talk about the next section of the film, which I'm calling The Naming of the Shrew. Because we're going to meet a bunch of the characters, kicking off with audiovisual kid Michael, played by David Krumholtz.
Yes, he's great. I couldn't work out for a long time where I knew him from. He's Mr. Universe in Serenity.
Oh, right.
Yeah. Very good. And he's giving new kid Cameron the tour.
I think the tour here is actually better than in Clueless. Like, I think the introducing the gangs in any teen film is one of my favourite scenes. And I've tried to write it myself and it's never as funny. But this is sharper. Like, the White Rastas and the Cowboys is just weird. And so it's really, really funny.
I like the Cowboys.
Yeah.
I like the Cowboys. The future NBAs, the Cowboys, you said the White Rafters, the Jocks and the Coffee Kids.
Yeah. The Coffee Kids is weird, though.
What works, and it's, you know, we've talked about this recently, you know, voiceover and narration versus no voiceover and narration. And I think here it works better than Clueless because it's all happening for real in camera. There's no narration. It's not sort of using that tool to back up the gags on screen. And also this script is way more surreal than the script for Clueless, which I personally love.
So I mentioned Cameron. He's played by Joseph Gordon-Levitt. He falls in love at first sight with Bianca Stratford. But
Alex Mack.
Oh, yeah.
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 Right?
That's weird.
What's Alex Mack?
Nickelodeon show that was on the late 90s.
Okay. I was a bit old for Nickelodeon in the late 90s.
Never too old for Nickelodeon, Chris.
21. But there's a problem because the Stratford sisters aren't allowed to date. We meet Bianca's sister, Kat, played by Julia Stiles, who is our shrew. People think she's a heinous bitch. She's a mewling Rapalian wretch. They make use of Shakespeare several times in this film. I quite like the way they sort of sneak it in. It doesn't feel like it's too much.
Yep.
No.
She doesn't like the oppressive patriarchy. She kicked a dude in the balls. She loves Sylvia Plath. So basically, this is how I imagine 16-year-old Vicky to have been.
I knew this was going to come up. I knew it would. But imagine me, like, you can imagine what, I mean, I'm like it now. So imagine what I was like at school. And this is why I loved her so much, because she's really angry about stuff, but she kind of owns that anger, and she, you know, it doesn't seem too... Watching it this time, I thought maybe Julie says, sometimes I think she's wooden and sometimes I think she's just like exceptionally good in this role. And it just depends like how I'm feeling. But it, like, school is hard, and for girls like me and girls like her, and she just completely owns that space and she doesn't care. And it's like, that is like catnip to me when I'm fucking however many years old watching this. Like, and she doesn't have this thing where it's like, you know, I love She's All That, but it's not going to be a makeover. She doesn't have like a dramatic makeover scene. And she's not like, oh, if I just take off my glasses and I'm suddenly hot and all the rest of it. She just is like purely herself. And also...
And hot.
But when you're watching The Taming of the Shrew, because you're watching it or reading it, sorry, now... The shrew was always the hero to me, because you can't, you know, it's, she gets a bit of like, yeah, she gets like sleep deprived and tortured in the original play, but you identify with her. And then Julia Stiles is saying, well, if that makes you a shrew, then that's fine, because so am I and I'm great.
I certainly saw shades of you. Thanks. In Julia Stiles in this movie. And I kind of wish I'd had the same ability that Mr. Morgan does in her class of being able to go, get out. get out
try
of
it,
this podcast.
Do you want me to go?
No, I don't really want you to go. Also, another similarity, bloody Riot Girl bands. She loves them. So do you.
I did, yeah.
Weren't you in one?
Well, I was in a band with boys.
Gross.
giving into the patriarchy.
Yeah, because this
is because I can't remember which, but one of the screenwriters loves the Riot Girl movement, and she wanted the soundtrack to be all Riot Girl songs, but yeah, that was not permitted. But I think you're right. She does walk a fine line, but I think she's ultimately really likable, even when she's being a bit much.
Yeah,
and I think Julia Stiles plays it quite well. I think I'd want to be friends with her.
But also, it works because of
the
way she
wouldn't want to be friends with you, Chris.
Really?
I mean, you could do your shtick, and you might, but she'd soon discover the beating heart of an alpha male inside, and it wouldn't last.
She ends up with an alpha male.
Oh, yeah, she does.
Yeah, but that's why it works.
I'm a lot like Heath Ledger.
I was waiting for that.
I used to get that a lot.
But that's why this works, because he doesn't judge her for her sort of anger at the world. He respects her for that anger at the world because he feels the same.
Yeah, exactly. He's pretty angry with the world.
Yeah.
We also meet Joey Donner, played by Andrew Keegan.
He's
more about Andrew a little bit later.
And we also get Spank Bank instead of Wank Bank.
It's weird, isn't it? Which is also fine, but
wank doesn't translate to America. They don't use it.
Do they not wank?
No.
Oh.
Well, I mean, they do.
Yeah, they do it.
They beat off.
Hmm.
Okay.
Well, they spank.
Okay.
Spank the monkey. So Spank Bank.
Okay.
But not wank.
Right.
Joey.
Motherfucker. Good, just covered everything there.
Sorry, Mum's there.
Joey is a jerk off. He's a model, but he does mostly regional stuff. And he wears mandals, a term I'd learned while listening to the commentary. I didn't know about that mandals were an actual thing.
What is that?
It's a man sandal.
Yeah.
All right.
Do you remember that period where basically they made words that were deemed inherently sort of female items more masculine by putting, it was like mascara or guyliner.
Mm. Yes.
And there was a brief period where skinny jeans seemed to be getting skinnier and skinnier and skinnier. And then they brought out male leggings or meggings.
Meggings.
And I'm guessing you had a pair.
Never. No. That was the point where I started to fall out of love with skinny jeans. That's a lie.
So Joey's going after Bianca as well. Oh, well, let's not get bogged down in the plots in terms of who's after who at what point, because With my intro, you'll see it gets very complicated, as that's what Shakespeare does. There's a scene where Michael crashes his bike.
Mm.
Broad physical comedy that I don't think really works.
It's a hell of a stunt.
Mm.
It is. The director added this, so this had nothing to do with the writers. I think they thought that he was adding it so it would be less female-centric, is how they put it. He was a sitcom helmer, Carl Junger. That was his background. He actually says... Carl Junger.
Gil,
not Carl Jung. I would love to have seen his version of this.
Again, you know, I have such a weakness. Him and Sigmund Freud doing that leaning back-to-back thing, like, get him in our sitcom. I call it Headspace. Oh, my God, brilliant. Wow. Someone commissioned this?
So, Gil... when he got the gig, he went out and bought 6 how to direct books and read them in a week.
If you do that, you don't ever let that information disseminate into the world that someone then passes it on to Chris Tilley. You hide those books in a vault and you get them out at night under the duvet.
But yeah, as I say, they didn't always get on, the screenwriters and the director. The relationship was rocky, as one of the writers put it, and they reckon that was because his sitcom instincts to do a lot of physical comedy was not what they'd written, and they're quite unhappy with how some of it looks, which I'll talk about as we move on. So how it looks, how it's shot, how it's sort of paced.
It's a weird one that you actually mention that now, because I agree there are some strange shot choices in it. It does feel small. It feels at moments like a TV movie.
Mm.
And then, for example, I think one of the most memorable scenes that we talked about, Heath Ledger singing the song, as well as it being a big moment, is the fact that it is quite an iconic scene and you get a scale.
Cinematic.
You get a sense of scale, yeah.
Right, on to the next section, which I'm calling the Rules of Attraction or Meet the Parent. I couldn't decide, so I've said them both. Mm. Because we meet the dad, the overprotective dad. You a fan of this chap?
We talked about him at length on the Pretty Woman episode. It's Larry Miller. He's a freaking legend. He's the best thing in this movie. Spoiled my MVW. Bloody hell. He's great, though. He's so, so funny. He's better than Dan Hedaya in Clueless.
Ooh, I don't know about that.
So he has 2 rules for his daughters. The first rule is no dating till you graduate. And the second rule is no dating till you graduate. Because he does not want them to be impregnated. He then comes up with another rule. On the fly, Bianca can date when Kat dates, which is bad parenting because he's putting his daughters to war. Mm. You know what I think, Vicky? This is not true, this is not a good thing to do to your children.
as the only parent in the room, Victoria.
Will I do that?
Will you pitch a couple of the twins against each other?
If one of your sons is essentially undateable like Kat.
I wish they're not because they're gorgeous.
Would you make that rule? Yeah, they're young, like, when they get older.
It's like the end of Clueless again.
They're going to have no problems. They're going to slay it out there. That's a weird thing to say. I don't want them to ever go anywhere,
they're
to be honest.
Crush it. They're going to crush it.
Little heartbreakers. York, sorry, that's awful.
It's all right, I'm just swallowing vomit.
So the various boys are now on a mission to find Kat a date. All the potential candidates say no, and they settle on Patrick because he's
sexy as fuck. What?
Because he's sexy AF, but also because he maybe lit a state trooper on fire. He spent a year in San Quentin. He sold his liver on the black market for a new set of speakers. He slept with a Spice Girl and they heard he ate a live duck.
That's
once.
That's really funny.
Everything but the beacon feet.
That is funny. And what's really good is that at least three of those are brought back later as callbacks, which is, I love that. Because they were, I think in other scripts, potentially, they would be, that's funny, and we move on.
Yeah.
But the fact that someone later on says to him, should you be drinking?
Yes.
You haven't got a liver.
Yeah. And he doesn't know what they're talking about. He's like, what? And the guy's like,
and then when Joey, I think, goes up to him to try and get him to be part of the plan, he goes, I had duck last night. It was delicious. Yeah.
Well, as you say, Patrick's the guy, so they pay him, but they need a backer, someone stupid with money. So that's Joey. Patrick negotiates $50. And then Patrick starts kind of stalking Kat a little bit so that he can figure out who she is and get a date with her. We then got a scene with the sisters arguing about Mum's pearls, which made me think she was dead at first, but then no, it seems Mum left.
I thought she was dead, yeah, with that scene, but she's just walked out.
It's a weird scene between the sisters, which kind of sticks out, and it's interesting because the commentary, they do talk about it. So she had a mum. They had a mum in the original script.
It was in the film.
Right. But the studio told them to cut the mum.
Too many women.
almost worse than that. They thought that Kat needed a reason to act like she did.
Okay.
And so this would give her a reason. So as the screenwriter said, it couldn't be that she's just like that. So they complain that basically in Hollywood, if you have a vagina and an attitude, there's got to be an explanation. There's got to be a reason. It can't just be this is the person I am. Right, so that was interesting. They said that they were sort of forced to do that and then to add the pearl scene. And they don't love that scene. They feel like it's a bit overwrought and just doesn't really work.
Okay.
So Cameron and Michael and even Bianca start helping Patrick strategize. Bianca's investigating her sister as well. She's not a lesbian because she likes Jared Leto.
Mm-hmm.
So she's really into the Joker, isn't she?
Oh, yeah.
Good. Heath Ledger and Jared Leto. She doesn't like smokers. She wears black knickers. She likes Thai food and feminist prose. And she likes angry girl music of the indie rock persuasion. It's my kind of girl.
You should send me at school.
That's a cracking list.
Do you want to know a funny fact about Andrew Keegan? He didn't know how to draw a cock and balls.
What?
You know when he draws it
on his face
of Michael. Apparently, Michael David Kromholtz had to teach him how to draw a cock and balls.
How strange!
Which is weird.
Mm.
That was it. I just don't know how you. I mean, have you ever drawn a cock and balls?
Of course, I have been to school. So yeah.
No, exactly. I just don't know how you miss that initiation of drawing a cock and balls.
Oh, I'm agreed. But Andrew,
I'll show you. Look.
Andrew
Bosch. 3 seconds. There it is. Circumcised, that one.
But Andrew Keegan.
Always easier to draw than circumcised.
I always do it up.
Ooh,
oh,
no.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah. Yeah.
Do one quickly.
No.
Why?
Because it's an audio podcast.
I just want to see it.
All right. We're going to take a break now. I'll draw it while we're taking a break.
Put my cock and balls on Twitter.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah.
You do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I actually got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad was thinking of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know.
And then we're way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
And we're back with a section I'm calling Bogey Lowenstein's Party, because it's Bogey Lowenstein's Party. So Bogey Lowenstein's having a cheese and wine party.
Are you having a break then?
I still have vaccine issues. Right. He's having a cheese and wine party for future MBA students, which the lads turn into a free beer party.
Way.
So now Patrick needs to persuade Kat to go with him. He goes to the Skunk Club.
Which looks fine.
It's called Club Skunk.
Club Skunk.
Sorry. A bar that's 99% women.
Yeah, but it looks really tame. Like when they're like, "Oh, I won't be seen at Club Skunk," but it's like quite mild, and there's women there.
It's interesting.
Women there drinking water.
It's interesting. Yeah. I feel the way he delivers that line, like I can't be seen at Club Skunk. It feels like there's a story, like something has happened there. So I was kind of waiting for there to be some history of him at Club Skunk.
He's barred. Yeah,
but doesn't work.
It wasn't.
Seems cool.
This is the scene where, so as a feminist hero. Kat, she's got everything, but Heath Ledger walks into the club and he's like, oh yeah, God, I hear you like Bikini Kill. And she's like, oh my God, you know Bikini Killer. And she's so obviously being played, and I don't understand why she can't see that. She can see everything else, but all of a sudden this boy that's been following her around is like, yeah, I'm really into the bands that you're into. Yeah. So obvious that he is playing you. And she's like, oh God, you're interesting. And that just sort of doesn't ring true for me, for the character.
Yeah. I mean, I know who Bikini Killer Victoria.
What's your favourite Bikini Kill song?
I don't know who Bikini Kill are. I know who Bikini Kill are, but I was never, you know, as far as Riot Girls went, L7 was about the limit for me.
And was that mainly because of that, the word performance?
Flipping heck, yes. As a kid, do you remember the word performance that they did?
No, I don't.
You heard about it?
I've heard about it, yeah.
Okay, moving on.
Pretend We're Dead was a tune.
Yeah.
So they're going to, Kat agrees to go to the party. Dad isn't sure. This is the scene where Dad asks them, asks Bianca to wear the belly.
So fucking weird.
A pregnancy suit.
It's good.
That she could understand the full weight of her decision.
It's just good, but weird, because it's like contraception is a thing. Like, I wish he had another bee in his bonnet. Like,
but isn't that his job, though?
He's an obstetrician. An obstetrician, yeah. So he delivers babies.
Yeah, so I think the idea is it's just on his mind.
Yeah.
And I guess he's a single dad. I mean, it's like, it's over the top. Yeah. I think this is one of the bits that made me laugh.
The belly thing.
Yeah. Because it's so surreal. It's such a weird thing. It's taking reality and then adding a layer of absolute insanity to it. It works for me. Question. There's a previous scene here where they discover Kat owns black underwear, which means you want to have sex. Is that I've always worn black underwear and I didn't know that was a signal. And is it specific to women?
Why don't you ask Quora or whatever it is that you ask for all your sex-related emotional responses and see what that spits out.
I checked. Debbie hadn't written an answer. So I'm all out of info.
I don't think Debbie does wear black knickers.
Well, I also think...
She's a financial auditor, so she has to dress professionally.
So we're at Bogey's party in the castle. He thinks Nigel's at the door with debris. And it's actually the coordinated arrival of a shit ton of teens with beer.
One of them is carrying the brie, though.
Oh, is that true?
Oh, it's Nigel. Yeah, Nigel's rushed in the middle of it all.
Also, why do you need to bring that much beer to a party that's free beer? That was the whole idea of the party, was
that's
free
true.
Beer.
True.
And everyone's bringing beer. I didn't understand that.
Oh, I see, yeah.
This is where the music is good from the wrong era. You've got Word Up by Cameo and Push It by Salt-N-Pepa.
My God, amazing.
Great song.
I mean, they both get me up and dancing.
I've never seen you dance.
I've seen you dance.
We danced on my birthday, didn't
we? Yeah, we did.
Oh, yeah.
I can't remember that.
You're a brilliant dancer.
Is that the same birthday where Chris forgot where he lived and tried to get into someone else's
don't
house?
Don't tell everybody that.
That's a fantastic story.
lost my coat that night.
Yeah. But more important,
that's all he remembers.
More important thing is you trying to open someone else's front door.
For 45 minutes.
With Vicky with you and you going, this is definitely where I live. And Vicky saying, are you sure this is where you live?
I had a red door and my house has a red door. So it's not my fault. Cameron flirts with Bianca, but Bianca leaves with Joey. Then Bianca sees Joey being a douche and starts having feelings for Cameron. And Kat starts drinking because she's upset about Joey and Bianca. And Kat starts dancing to Biggie Smalls.
She's amazing. Let her dance.
She apparently got a role from that dance, didn't she?
Saved the Last Dance.
Yeah.
Wait, I think she's quite bad at dance. She goes on
a dance journey, yeah.
But even at the end when she's doing the hip-hop dancing,
yeah.
I think she's quite bad in Save the Last Dance, whereas she's all right
here.
She's
fucking awesome.
She looks cool here.
It's a well-done scene. I really like it.
That's tequila for you.
I know.
Love a tequila. However, I discovered...
We're never having tequila again.
Listen, we are, so that's not true. We might have it tonight, in fact. However, I did discover... I've been disseminating misinformation on this podcast. On a previous episode, I said tequila is the only alcohol that is a stimulant, whereas all of the alcohols are depressants, and that's why I love it.
Right.
It's not. It's a myth. Tequila is a depressant.
Of course it is.
I know now.
I feel worse.
Because I went on Quora. Debbie said it was.
I feel worse after my nights out with you than any other nights, and I'm going to say it's because of the tequila.
Wear that as a badge of honour.
Yeah.
That's great for me.
So Kat's drunk.
I can't believe you fell for that tequila. It's such a teenage thing to be like, I only drink tequila because it's actually an upper.
Young at heart. Young at heart, man. That's it. That's it, right? Yeah. Is that what they do? Is that what young people do?
Definitely.
So Kat hits her head and Patrick's really nice here. He looks after her. He makes sure she hasn't got a concussion. They have a bit of a connection. Then she vomits on his shoes.
Great.
He takes her home and doesn't kiss her when she tries to kiss him.
And that's brilliant.
And now she hates him with the fire of a thousand suns because he didn't kiss her when she had puke on her breath.
Yeah, it's not that. He should just explain himself. He should just say, you were drunk, so I didn't go for it
He shouldn't have to explain himself.
Yeah, he does say maybe we should do this on another occasion.
Yeah.
She has not brushed her teeth since her upchuck reflex.
That's not why he's not kissing her. You do understand the distinction.
I do understand, but to her, that's why she must imagine. Yes. She must understand that's why.
And he just needs to sweep in and be like, I am super cool for 1999 and consent was a little bit murky there.
I don't think he needs to.
Okay.
What don't you think he needs to do? Explain himself.
No, I think he did the right thing. And I'm sorry, if he's got a problem with that, then... That is her problem.
Yeah, but at the same time, he's the one who's been chasing her and she finally has given in to his advances, as it were. And then he's like, no, which is, it's a really big deal for her, clearly, to do that. and without an actual verbal explanation. So yeah, I think
she should be apologising to him the next day.
Great.
Wow.
Next section, how I learned to stop worrying and love the prom.
Good.
Joey wants to take Bianca, so again plays Patrick to try and get Kat to the prom. And this is where we get the song.
Yeah.
It was originally in the script. It was I Think I Love You by the Partridge Family.
Great.
But then that was used in Scream. I think it was it Scream 2? It was used. Someone sings it to a girl. One of the Scream movies anyway. So they couldn't use that. They changed it to I Touch Myself by the Divinals.
That's a bad idea.
That's a great song.
It's the greatest song. But they decided it wasn't particularly romantic. And then no one seems to agree on who came up with this.
I know, it's weird, isn't it? Someone says it was Julia Stiles. Yeah. Someone says it was Heath Ledger.
Yeah, I think the director says it was him. But they ended up with, I think the screenwriter said it was the director who came with it, but they ended up with Can't Take My Eyes Off of You, which is perfect choice. Because if they had picked a contemporary pop song, I don't think this scene would be as memorable.
Yeah.
He's great in it. Weirdly, this is quite a weird fact that I found out about. Kristen Smith said that Ledger had his own costume ideas for the scene. He was really specific about what he wanted to wear. It had to be this certain type of dark shirt with a precise fit. Oddly, it's a kind of nondescript ensemble when you actually see it in the movie, but seeing him as the architect of the costume at 19 was really impressive. I'd argue that he knows his clothes because he dresses very well in this movie.
Does he not just wear a black t-shirt?
He wears, so here's the thing. So he's got there's a scene where he's wearing a navy blue short-sleeved shirt.
Yes.
And it is genuinely the perfect fit because it's very slim, but it's not too tight. So the buttons aren't opening between the gaps aren't appearing between the buttons. So I went online and after watching this, and I have purchased a similar blue
short-sleeved
shirt. Did you Google Heath Ledger 10 things to shirt? How did you find it?
No, I didn't. I just, I did some due diligence and I researched various companies, went on some.
Ask Debbie.
Went on Quora. Yep. And found out what the best shirt.
When you start as a financial analyst, you can wear that shirt.
Well, I won't be wearing the shirt as a financial analyst because like Debbie says, you've got to dress professionally.
Oh, right. You don't think. Okay.
A short sleeve shirt as a financial analyst.
I've no idea.
So it's beautifully shot, this. It's wonderfully played by Heath Ledger, and you can see why she kind of starts melting a little bit.
Of course.
And he gets detention for his efforts. And
this is a bad scene.
Yeah, she helps break him out by talking to the teacher about his penis, then showing him her breasts.
I know that it was like that. It's really funny and whatever, but you wouldn't to flash a teacher is just mad. Like that is wild. And
she's dazzling him with her wits.
And yeah.
That's quite a good joke.
It's but can you imagine?
It's odd. So that was a rewrite that they actually did with Julia Stiles. They wrote that scene together and they don't like that scene.
It's beneath her, the character. Yeah. It's beneath them. It's the kind of thing that seems funny and seems innocent, but if it actually happened at school, would be awful. He is in a position of power. It's all not good.
They also hate the way the scene is directed. They felt the music was bad and it's played like sort of a slapstick caper.
Yeah.
It's that thing.
Not what they were going for.
It's like we were talking about the belly scene where the father makes them wear the belly, which is sort of a heightened reality, kind of insane, but works. Whereas this, they've done the same thing. They've gone, take it to the next level. But all the reasons you just said, it makes you go, it would never happen, and takes you out of the movie.
Yeah.
So they go on a date. What do you guys think of this date?
It starts
with a pedalo that doesn't move.
It's really funny. She like busts him out of detention. Really quick cut pedalo. It's like, where does that come from?
Followed by paintballing without guns. The writer said when they watched the rushes of that, they were very disappointed that their couple had to wear goggles. They weren't expecting that and thought that kind of made it slightly less sexy.
Are they not Simbaker Grove? Obviously not.
It looks like a miserable date to me. He's like, do you want to come to Laser Quest?
I think it's... that's a great place.
Thank you.
It's not a good date.
I would love that.
A good date.
What are you talking about?
That'd be amazing.
I'd destroy the girl.
You would as well. You'd fully 100%. Partridge. You'd ruin it. Headshot. You're dead.
Double tap.
Hey, do you want to get a burger?
Headshots in Laser Quest. It's all on the chest. I know that because there was one in Leeds and you had it was fun in theory, but you'd get a lot of dicks who really wanted it, were probably in the TA, who turn up. And like they'd wander around holding their arm
blocking
the sensor and shooting all the kids just to get the highest score possible. It was ridiculous. It ruined it. But yeah, I had to look up. I couldn't find whether paintballing without guns is a thing, weirdly enough. I don't know if it is.
It's just, I don't care about the paintballing. I just find the cutesiness actually a bit toe curling. But then it's all fine because then the kiss is great. But the actual date where they're like, got you, is like, bleh. But fine.
And it really worked because in real life they got together. And
did they?
They dated for quite a long time.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. The paintballing thing doesn't exist in real life.
Okay.
Because the Washington Tourist Board.
I said before, I don't really care.
The Tacoma Tourist Board. Let me finish. Okay. The Tacoma Tourist Board said that they created a list of all the date places that you could go. Mm-hmm. And the gasworks is on there, but there is no paintballing. But that gasworks is there.
Great. So you can walk around an old gasworks.
Yeah,
great. Is there hay in which you can tumble?
Yeah, why not?
Yeah. Yes, there is.
So Patrick insists that they go to prom and Kat starts smelling a rat here. And then he lies to her face. He says, there's nothing in it for me, just the pleasure of your company.
It's really bad because if it wasn't Heath Ledger, and as much as we love him, he is gaslighting her. Like, he's gaslighting the shit out of her. And that's bad.
Mm.
But it's kind of fine. I don't know. Like, it's just this weird, the weird alchemy of him.
Well, you'd have to change the Shakespeare stuff because that is very Shakespeare, that kind of thing. And maybe you should change. That's the stuff you should change.
Yeah.
Because it is weird to watch as a modern audience. But and then there's other stuff going on. We've got the Bianca and Cameron relationship. He's tutoring her, which I found confusing here because she speaks French really well.
Much better than him.
So why is he tutoring her?
Yeah.
Because he's tutoring her because he's interested in her. So why is she being tutored by him if she's not interested in him and she knows French?
Does it matter when he's tutoring her from a book that still has a hole in it from the scene about an hour earlier where Heath Ledger drills it? I was like, that's such attention to detail.
And Bianca's nice now because she wasn't particularly nice at the start of the film. But I never really find her that likeable. I don't know if that was the actor or the character. I think it's a tricky character, the Bianca character.
Yeah, it's difficult because she is trying to be, or is written as, Cher Horowitz because she's ditzy
she's superficial.
Yep, but she just isn't, it isn't quite the same. And it's a shame because you just keep comparing them and she comes off worse because of that.
And what the hell is she wearing for prom?
Well, I quite liked it, actually.
We're getting to that.
Yeah.
But before, we've got this crazy revelation. Kat went out with Joey and they had sex.
Yeah, they did.
I did not see that coming. I thought that was a really well done twist.
Yeah. If it just feels really, I wasn't surprised because it just feels familiar.
Yeah, well, there's a bit because
early on says she used to be really popular and then she stopped it.
Mm.
And I think it's a brilliant scene because Kat is a feminist, but the blind spot in her feminism is like Bianca's lifestyle. So it's very pulse feminist, like I should be able to do these things. And that whole argument about pulse feminism is basically you can wear short skirts and lipstick and blah, blah, blah. But she had this blind spot for her sister and she corrects it because she's learning to be vulnerable because of fit as fuck Patrick. So it's all kind of coming together.
Cool. All right. Got it.
Get out.
Got it. And then we're into prom. So as you said, Alex, Bianca's prom dress. It looks a bit like candy floss or something.
Cool,
a weird
she's got,
Barbie.
Like, the belly top.
It's not a dress. It's a top and a skirt.
Fine.
All right.
Did you think, maybe I was a bit tired, but Kat's prom dress, she looked to me like Jodie Foster in Contact. Did you not think? Like, she's got that weird sort of Renaissance. I know it's because it's Shakespeare, but.
Yeah.
A bit.
You mean when she turns up to that dinner, the drinks thing in Contact when Matthew McConaughey's there?
Yeah.
Larissa Olenik, who plays Bianca, says of that dress, it looked beautiful in the sketch.
It's nice.
And she said that there were audible gasps in the audience when she watched the film, when she appeared on screen in that dress. And she said they weren't good gasps.
I
really like it.
But equally, she said there were a lot of teens that year that did wear that outfit to the prom because there were a lot of teens that thought it looked great.
She's deconstructed a prom dress and that is bold and I like it.
Well, based on what you're wearing today, I can only agree with your analysis because you look, it's a double thumbs up.
Double thumbs up.
How many stars? I'm giving it a high four.
Thanks.
Okay, five. Jeez, that look, five then.
I've not mentioned the character Mandela before because she's weirdly sort of underwritten and it feels like her role was cut.
Oh, the Shakespearean one.
That's accurate. So she loves Shakespeare and this was the dark stuff in the original script because Mandela is based on a character in Greek mythology who wanted to die to be with his favourite author. And so in the original script, she was starving herself, she was self-harming and she wanted to die to join Shakespeare in heaven, which weirdly all got cut from this Disney film.
Strange that, isn't it?
But it's like an afterthought that her and Michael get together.
It works though. It's quite sweet that they find each other.
Sure, and he part of the way he sort of gets into her good books is he gives her this beautiful Elizabethan era dress, and then he appears to dress like Austin Powers.
Yeah, that's true.
He's supposed to be Shakespeare, but he does look more like Austin. And then the shit hitteth the fan because Kat overhears that Patrick was paid to take her around. She is out of there.
Yeah.
But there's still more action to be happening at the prom. Joey punches Cameron and then Bianca punches Joey twice, then knees him in the balls. And I really like that she's her own hero here who rescues herself rather than...
Yeah, it's one of those moments we're talking about heightening things. It just didn't feel very realistic. Like, I've never punched anyone, but I believe it hurts.
Really?
I really have. Wait.
Have you ever punched anyone?
Have I ever punched anyone? No, I haven't.
Have you?
But that's not
you,
to say
I thought you had punched someone.
Yeah, I have.
Yeah,
like, wasn't it in some pub brawl or something?
A street brawl?
Yeah.
Awful. Awful business. Like, not funny. A bit funny with hindsight. And
what,
it hurt.
What happened? Why did you punch someone?
Because he punched me.
Oh, that'll do it.
He punched you?
Yeah.
Bloody hell.
Yeah, it was really bad.
Did you know him or was he a stranger?
No.
Were you talking too loudly?
No, I wasn't. No, I wasn't.
What had you said? How did it begin?
I'm not telling you.
All right.
I'll tell you later.
This is for the pub.
For the courts to decide.
Oh, I've written that wrong. My final section.
We'll put it on Twitter.
Right. Final section. Can't buy me love. Can buy me love. Didn't need the tea.
Are you actually deleting? You've just said it out loud. You're never going to go back to these notes. Why are you deleting the tea?
When we do the book, I'll need these notes and I don't want to write the wrong thing.
That's wrong now, yeah.
So Kat reads out her sonnet entitled 10 Things I Hate About You. Now, Kirsten, one of the screenwriters, she's actually a published poet. So it's quite surprising how bad this poem is, I would say.
No.
What?
Oh, it's terrible.
No.
Okay.
Honestly,
she's a teenager.
I teared up during this speech. Mm-hmm.
It's a bad sonnet, but the delivery is good, is what I would say. Julia Stiles is crying when she's reading it.
But don't you think she is very brave to not be mortified by what she has felt? So she's just owning that embarrassment, and the poem is really lovely, and she obviously doesn't hate him and all the rest of it. But rather than being like, I cannot believe I fell for that, and then the shame of that, and I'm never going to acknowledge that this thing happened, she says it, she makes it public, so she owns all of that.
No, and I agree. I'm slagging off this poem, but I wrote a lot of poetry back in the day, and I'm sure it was a lot worse than
did
this.
Did you?
Yeah, you used to write all kinds of things.
And also, if you're watching this when you're at school, can you imagine doing this at school? Like, if this happened,
I wasn't
at school when this came out, but imagine if that had happened to you at school. There's no motherfucking way you'd stand up and be like, this happened to me, and this is how I feel.
Do you not think, though? So he sacrificed himself on the altar of dignity earlier by singing in the stadium to win her back.
And he was getting paid for it.
But here, during the poem that she reads out, she does say that despite her finding out at the prom that he was being paid to be there and there'd been this ruse going on, he has not attempted to contact her in any way in the intermediate period of time between the prom and her reading that, which kind of feels like, why is she making the effort when he is the one who's done wrong and hasn't made any attempt to say sorry?
I agree.
Or is he not being disrespectful of her wishes?
I really love that. I'm going to use that. Thank you, Chris. I'm being respectful by not apologising.
She ends it by saying she hates the way she doesn't hate him. And so to get back in her good books, Patrick buys her a guitar. And
if only it was that easy.
So
you've tried it. It doesn't
work.
I
have a room full of guitars. Just go pick one up. Pick your own. Go in there. Go in the room.
So he buys her forgiveness. He buys her affection. Is this a betrayal of her character, Vicky?
No, because I think, is it clear when she's playing the guitar earlier that if the guitar was like, this is $300, and then it would be so clearly signified that he didn't take the money for himself, obviously, and bought her a present. And just the way that they have, you know, the way that he explains it, where she does say, you can't buy me a guitar every time we fall out. And he's like, well, there's the bass and the drums. And like, it's just done so well that you're like, okay, fine.
No, I agree. I think they write their way out of it.
Yeah.
And then a band play a song on a roof.
Yeah, that's weird.
What are you talking about? That's fantastic.
It's
Letters to Cleo with a band doing a cover of Cheap Trick's I Want You to Want Me.
It would have been cool if they got Cheap Trick.
Did you not?
Who the hell? So I feel like I knew music back then. Hmm. Who the hell are Letters for Cleo? I did a lot of research on them. They had like one top 20 hit in America.
Yeah, they weren't a big band.
I'll tell you who I thought it was. You remember Scarlet?
No.
And I said it was an independent love song. Fucking brilliant. I thought it was them for a really long time.
Did you not spend, though, regardless of who Letters to Cleo were, I don't mind this cover of a great song.
Good song.
Did you not spend the whole end sequence going, how the fuck did they get on that roof? And because it looks terrifying. And I found an interview that the band did, and they said it was absolutely petrifying. It was a windy day. The space on the roof was about the size of our kitchen. There was a bit of chicken wire draped around the side in case someone fell and could grab onto the chicken wire. They said the helicopter, they weren't sure how close the helicopter was because they were concentrating on playing and it kept dive bombing them to get the shots. And they'd been told by the director, every time the helicopter takes off is $500,000, so don't fuck it up.
Great.
And they said it was really, really scary. But they used a trapdoor on the roof to get out there because there were some ladders on the side of the roof. And I was like, did they have to climb up
like
those?
Like trapdoor, and then they just went whoosh and they just slid down.
I think it's a really cool shot. And I think it's a really good song. And it's a really upbeat end to a teen movie. And it feels so 1999. And I got a little bit like, I wish it was 1999.
And I quite like a comedy ending with some outtakes. Sends you away with a good upbeat feeling. I mean, it's no Burt Reynolds and Dom DeLuise, but
yeah, they're good. They're good. I mean, the interesting thing about those bloopers is something that I noticed, which is that Bianca never gets hauled over the coals by her sister for her part in the ruse.
Yeah,
and clearly that blooper is when she's walking her sister down the corridor going, what were you trying to do to me? You were trying to put me in therapy for the rest of my life. So clearly they'd shot that scene. Mm. And obviously not that take, because that's the one with the director messing about in the background. But they'd written that in and they took it out.
Mm. Should have kept it in.
Should have kept it in.
That can be your change.
It is my change.
Are we not on the changes? Before we get to the bits, though, I'm going to tell you a little bit more about Andrew Keegan.
Please.
A.K.A. Joey Don, a very good-looking lad.
If that's your thing.
Played that character a few times and then his career hasn't, you know, hit the heights of some of the other people. That's because Andrew Keegan started a religion called Full Circle in Venice, which is a non-denominational, non-profit, community-based centre located in the heart of Venice, California, that offers spiritual and artistic environment within which people may develop their potential as reflective beings. He decided to set that up in 2011 when he was attacked in LA the same time a tsunami was hitting Japan. That synchronicity was a sign to Andrew Keegan. So he set up this community that would activate high vibes and channel extreme flow.
Okay.
And the last that was heard of them was in 2015. They got raided for selling illegal kombucha.
Illegal kombucha? What was illegal about it? Did it have drugs in it?
You need a license to sell it.
So kombucha is tea, isn't it?
Yeah, no. But it has alcohol in it.
Does it?
Enough alcohol that you need a license.
Really?
Yeah, it's not going to get you hammered. But
That's why I don't know about it.
And there's a lot of kombucha in LA. So,
right, okay.
You know, you want to know you're getting the good stuff.
Sure.
Premium stuff when you have your avocado toast and your kombucha.
Okay.
There's also like a weird wanking story as well, which I won't go into. But yeah, bit of a wrong one.
Open with the wanking story next time.
So let's do the bits. Vicky, best scene.
Heath Ledger singing and dancing down the steps. I mean, the thing is, though, this is... It's like mawkish, but I love the thought, because even though it's not true, that he's like kick-stepping his way down these steps. He's doing a brilliant dance. And it's like, that's so weird to see him do the dance down the steps.
I hadn't thought of
it's
that.
Weird though, isn't it?
A little bit,
I like the thought that Joaquin Phoenix is like, this is for you, even though that's not true. And also, who cares? But I don't know. I just thought it was...
Musical number. Alex, musical number?
That or Julia Stiles reading the poem.
Oh. All right, I've got the musical number.
Okay.
Because it is the best scene in the film. It's the one all of us remember.
Yeah.
All right,
just give me a look next time. It's the musical number. Just edit
it. I said it. Alex, most
Heath
valuable
Ledger.
Whatever.
Heath Ledger, sorry. I thought we were going. Heath Ledger. Heath Ledger, definitely. He's just incredible. He makes what is a complicated role and at times an unlikable character just like someone you want to spend the rest of your life with.
Vicky?
It has to be Julia Stiles.
Mm.
Yeah, for... just representing that person who doesn't very often get represented without a makeover where she's secretly this fit as fuck, or without having to relax in some way or whatever. She just is herself. And there's a lot of girls like that. And we're not often on screen because we're difficult, etc.
Yep, she's good. I didn't know who the hell Letters for Cleo were but they're all over this film. So power to them, but I'm not going for them. Mine, MBW, is lead casting director Marsha Ross, as she did a very good job and launched a bunch of very fine careers. I mean, they're not just serious actors, but movie stars as well. Yeah. Like, quite a few of them managed to do both those things. So good job, Marsha. And Vicky, what would you change, if anything?
So we didn't talk about it, but it's the same thing with Clueless. Like, Clueless has the wedding bouquet scene, which hasn't aged well for me. And this scene with Bianca and Joseph Gordon-Levitt. And you know I'm a massive Joseph Gordon-Levitt fan, but this kind of ruins him.
Why does she find it so hard to say?
I do find that really difficult. I'm just going to call it. What's his character name? Cameron. So, and I really love Cameron. Not as a character. No, I hate Cameron. Joseph Gordon-Levitt, I'm a big fan of, right? But this scene ruins him for me a bit, and it's not his fault, obviously. But they're in the car, and he's like, I learned French for you, and I did this, and I did whatever. So now you have to get off with me. So she gives him a pity kiss, and then he's like, yeah, back in the game, or whatever he says. And that scene, it's, you know, we talk a lot about it was of its time and all the rest of it. It's uncomfortable. He's basically saying, I was nice to you, so now you have to get off with me. That's never good. Never. In 1999, it wasn't good. But it's just nice now that we have more breathing space to be able to articulate how bad that is. And that scene needs updating.
Well, Elton is called out for it in Clueless for acting in a similar fashion 4 years before.
But Joseph Gordon-Levitt's thing is, I've been nice to you, so I'm owed something. So it plays into this idea that women withhold intimacy and sex because it's transactional in nature, and that's very, very wrong and very bad. So that needs to be sorted out.
I mean, it's sometimes transactional in nature, but that's different.
I mean, that's a different thing. That's when it literally is a transaction. Yeah.
He should have given her a guitar.
See what he's done. See what he's done, Vicky. Speechless. First time in 2 years that's happened on this podcast.
Just give me a minute.
Alex, what would you change?
You're right.
I swear to God, if you fucking wink at me, I will hit you.
Give her a double wink. Give her two thumbs up. Two thumbs up. Alex, what would you change?
Well, as you know, because I'm a bit rubbish at this, I've already gone. I really think the sister, Bianca, there should be a scene where Julia Stiles goes, what were you bloody thinking?
Agreed. Yeah. Yep. Vicky, my change, got a couple here, but I'm not a big fan of the platform flip-flop.
Oh my God.
How do you feel? How do you feel about them? We should get rid of them.
Yeah, like
they dated really fast, didn't they?
Yeah, it's called a flatform.
Okay.
Oh, they are hideous.
Yeah, that's all Kat seems to wear,
isn't
it?
They are pretty bad, yeah.
It's worse than Joey's mandals. This is a cliche, but I would like to have seen Larry Miller have the dad chat with Cameron.
Because
it's
nice,
a cliche, but they pull out all the cliches, and it's just an opportunity, right, with comedic potential for him to speak to that lad. But mine, I think Patrick should be a bit more cruel. I think he's too nice from the off.
Okay.
Just think it's all a bit too easy and simple in this film with his character. He's just, there never seems to be any, I think there should be more danger coming from him. Or
I suppose it's just a nightmare, isn't it? Like you want to update The Taming of the Shrew, but The Taming of the Shrew is a cruel play to the woman. So what you do is you give her, you position her in a world, our world, where she has every right to be angry. But then if you make Patrick also mean to her, it's sort of too...
I just think you could make him a more complex character, I guess, that maybe he does behave in an awful way early on and you find out why, that there's a bit more layers to him rather than just a really nice bloke.
Yeah.
I mean, he's really nice. Right, we're nearly done, but Vicky, I have a hypothetical question for you.
Okay.
Prom, you're gonna like this one, I think.
I didn't go to prom just before you.
Well, that's because you're not American. We don't have proms here.
Okay.
Prom is coming up, but you don't have a date because you are a shrew.
Yeah, that's actually what would have happened. Thank God we didn't have prom. Mm.
Then both Paul Rudd and Heath Ledger invite you. Who do you go with?
Heath Ledger. 100, yeah.
Oh, Heath Ledger.
Without even, no competition.
It's good. I thought it might be a bit closer, but that's fair enough.
No. It's a good question, but my heart spoke.
Who do you go with, Chris?
Paul Rudd.
Really?
Yeah, I mean,
he's a bit too clean cut compared to this sort of...
We have a connection, though.
You and Paul Rudd?
Yeah. Have I not told you this? When I interviewed him for the 40-year-old virgin... he was with, is it Leslie Mann, the actress? So I sat down and he said, oh, I know you, don't I? And I said, No, you don't.
I'm not Max Payne.
Oh, I had hair and no beard back then.
Okay, sorry.
And he said, no, I'm sure I know you. And I said, you don't. And Leslie Mann goes, you've been weird, Paul. He goes, have we ever met? And I said, well, kind of. He goes, I've got it. 2 years ago, Austin, Texas, convention center roof. I was having a cigarette. Your friend was having a cigarette. A woman asked me for a photo. And I said, yes. And you took the photo. I said, yeah. He goes, I remember you, dude. I said, we didn't even speak. He goes, I remember you, dude. How you doing?
That's weird.
That is weird. Really weird.
I think he does want to go out with you. Basically. He's like, God, I can't wait to meet Chris again.
So maybe that's why I'm saying Paul Rudd, because I think I've got a chance.
You do.
Who would you pick?
Rudd.
Would you?
Yeah,
that
I would.
Surprises me.
Yeah.
I mean, guys like Rudd a lot.
Do you?
Yeah,
why?
I think so.
Do you know what?
He's
I don't
think.
Yeah, I just, I'm like, anecdotally, I don't, he is like popular with the women I know, but not as popular as Heath Ledger. Not in a million years.
He's just got great. I mean, I don't know. I met Heath Ledger once, and it was odd.
He was Paul too Rudd's got, sexy. Paul, that's the thing.
Paul Rudd's got this personality. You want to hang out with him and talk to him.
You'd be doing. Do you guys, want to shag him?
Us guys are about. No, but us guys are about personality, not looks all the time.
Exactly. Bullshit. Sorry.
We are. Come on, Alex. It's just sad,
well,
isn't it?
I don't know where you're getting
very
your information.
Very disappointed. Very disappointed in you, Vicky.
Yeah. No, Paul Rudd would be much more fun.
Okay.
Right, that's it.
Right then, that is the end of 10 Things I Hate About You. Right, it's the verdict.
You want answers? I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth!
So, these were your films, Victoria, yep. So take us away, verdict time.
Chris, you go first.
I'm going to start with a quote from 10 Things director Gil Younger, who said about his film when discussing the locations, I did not want the movie compared to Clueless in any way because Clueless was done so brilliantly. So sorry about this, Gil. We're about to compare it to Clueless. And while I think 10 Things is a more complete movie, I didn't, Joseph Gordon-Levitt it because it didn't make me laugh that much, whereas Clueless is a truly great comedy that's funny from start to finish. So while I wish there were actual stakes at some point in the movie and they had an actual ending, I ultimately think it's the better film, so Clueless for me.
Yeah. What about you?
I'm kind of surprised at my choice this week, to be perfectly honest, going into them. It's not what I thought I was going to go with, but then I couldn't remember either of these films. But one of these films is the absolute clear winner for me in every respect, not just because of the two options we have here, but because it's a bloody good movie. I actually think the cast, brilliantly cast, it's very funny. Great soundtrack, which I realise gives you no hint as to which way I'm going, because that could be either movie. And my winner, hands down, stomps the opposition this week. 10 Things I Hate About You.
Whoa.
Loved
well, it has got one good scene. Vicky.
We talk a lot, don't we, about when two things are so linked and one thing can only have been birthed because of the other thing. There is no 10 Things I Hate About You without Clueless. And as much as I love 10 Things I Hate About You, you have to honour that. Clueless is just a classic. I don't think I'll watch 10 Things I Hate About You as frequently as I will watch Clueless for the rest of my life. So it's Clueless.
Wrong! But interesting. I don't know that. I'm not sure about your thinking, Victoria.
Fuck off. We talk about this all the time. You're like, oh, Creed and Rocky. Really good example. You were pretending to be a bit torn.
Point Break and Fast and Furious, yep.
Yes!
No, I disagree that if we're saying that a movie that is clearly contributed to the existence of another film is always going to win...
Well, I just, all right then, fine. I do think Clueless is funnier.
Okay.
And it's better directed. Well, sometimes fine. The direction in 10 Things I Hate About You is a bit nuts and the music is too much. It's a bit like bop, 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 bop. That's too much.
Yeah, I think 10 Things is a good teen movie. I think Clueless is a truly great comedy.
Yes. What he said.
I laughed more in 10 Things I Hate About You. Film is subjective. What are you going to do? But the point is...
It's almost like that's the nature of this podcast, that we have different opinions.
Babe, I don't mind. I am not trying to check. You have your choice. That's fine.
I don't. Listen, and you have your choice. Oh, and I just want to be absolutely clear.
So edgy.
I just want to be absolutely clear. I think it's great that you've picked Clueless. My only problem was you're working out being that because it came first.
Okay.
Which I don't think is a good reason.
All right, fine. Well, then don't ever use that reason again in the future. And...
Okay.
And I just couldn't...
Two wrongs don't make a right, Victoria.
Okay.
So I'm just saying, let's get rid of that as a rule. Let's make that a rule now.
This has not turned out the way I thought. I'm just going
to... Can we snip all of that, please? Blondine, please cut all of that out.
I think it's important that our working out is illustrated verbally on this show. So a couple of fun and frothy movies end us on a high this week.
I feel depressed now.
Don't feel depressed, Chris.
Tell us about next week, Alex.
I'm going to tell you about next week, Chris. Right. So we are done this week. Next week, we have a very special guest coming on the show. Broadcaster, DJ and television presenter Dave Berry is going to be here. He has picked two movies. Well, he's picked one movie and we've picked the second movie to put up against his choice. So I gave you a clue on Monday's episode, which was The Original Odd Couple and Brian James. The movies we're going to be doing next week. Mr. Dave Berry has picked for us The Original Odd Couple and Brian James, Tango and Cash, and I've added to that The Original Odd Couple, Arnold Schwarzenegger, and James Belushi, Red Heat.
I mean, literally not The Original Odd Couple, because The Odd Couple are The Original Odd Couple, but it's all good.
I'm joking. But seriously, it's Red Heat versus Tango and Cash.
We've gone from Jane Austen and William Shakespeare to Red Heat and Tango and Cash, and I love it.
Yeah, that's good.
I, Joseph Gordon, love it.
A flipping great pairing next week, and I'm sure it'll be a much more upbeat end.
Yeah, let's not argue in front of guests.
Right, we are finished. If you haven't already subscribed to us, please do on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your pods. We are on Twitter at ClashPod and on Instagram at ClashPod. Thank you very much for listening. Congratulations to our winner this week, Clueless, and back on Monday talking Red Heat.
This was a Stakhanov production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad was thinking of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.